950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson filling in for Matt McNeil on your Monday afternoon. Some storms moving into the area. Just looking at the latest forecast, looks like sometime after 5 o'clock, but before midnight is when the Weather Service is saying we could be getting quite a bit of rain. 1 to 2 inches of the is what's in the forecast, according to the National Weather Service. So still summer, which means we can still get that severe weather. So make sure you watch out for that coming up tonight. Again, Brett filling in for Matt McNeil today. Matt is back coming up on Wednesday. Only two more days of substitute hosts. You got me today, then Hunter's back in coming up tomorrow here on AM 950. Also, later on the show, we have a very special guest. In fact, that very special guest is coming up, in probably a little less than 10 minutes. You'll certainly get a kick out of this guest that we're going to be having on the Matt McNeil Show. So make sure you stay tuned for that. So taking a look at some political news from around the state of Minnesota, MinnPost put out an interesting article that I saw this morning. And this has to do to what happens to campaign money of candidates that lose in the primaries. I've always kind of wondered that, because if you look at someone especially like Tim Pawlenty, who raised millions and millions of dollars, what exactly do they do with that money when they lose in the primary? And of course, here in Minnesota, we had so many primary races that were competitive with lots of candidates. We had a competitive governor's race on both the DFL and the Republican side. Of course, we had the big battle royal on the Democratic side for the attorney general position. On the Senate side, we had Richard Painter square off against Tina Smith, so lots of money raised there. CD8 for the DFL saw, I think, 5 candidates compete. Then CD1 for the GOP also saw a competitive race as well. So a lot of these candidates raised quite a bit of money, and now the question is, what exactly do they do with it now that they've lost and are out of the race for the general election? Well, Greta Call at MinnPost wrote an article about exactly that subject. So she takes Tim Pawlenty, for example, who is a state-level candidate, and she talks about how there are actually different rules if you're a state or a federal candidate as to what you do with that campaign money once you're out of the race. So taking Pawlenty, for example, he raised $2.1 million during the campaign season and still had $1 million on hand as of July 23rd, just a couple of weeks before the primary election. That's a lot of money to raise in a very short amount of time, but when you have those Wall Street connections like Teapot does, I guess you can raise that much money. But $2.1 million, that's very, very impressive. But essentially, someone like Tim Pawlenty, who is a state-level candidate, would have 3 options as to what they can do with that millions of dollars. First off, he can actually keep that money for another 6 years if he plans on running for another office. So he'd be able to hang on to that money through his campaign through 2024, should he decide to run for office again. Although in the case of Tim Pawlenty, he's indicated he is not going to run for state office in Minnesota. So your next option is, if you're not going to keep your options open and run for state office within the next 6 years, you can put it towards political purposes. Although in the case of a state-level candidate, you can only donate it to another state candidate. So in the case of Tim Pawlenty, or if we're looking at any of the DFL candidates who lost, that would be Aaron Murphy and Lori Swanson, they could only donate that money to a fellow state-level candidate, I should say. So they could donate to someone who's also running for governor, although I don't think Teapot is going to be donating any money to Jeff Johnson. Or they could give it to someone who's running for attorney general or running for Senate. Just the bottom line is, you can only donate it to someone who's also a state-level candidate. You can't give it to a federal candidate, who would be someone that's running for Congress, or a local candidate, that would be someone who is running for the state legislator. And, of course, your third option is giving it away for charitable giving. Also, at the local level, there are some different rules, or federal level, I should say, not local. If you're a federal candidate and you lost in your primary election, rules are somewhat similar than if you're on the state level, only you do not have a time limit on how long you can decide to keep that money if you decide to run for office in a future cycle. So in Minnesota, you have their 6-year limit. At the federal level, you can actually pretty much keep that money indefinitely if you plan on running for office in a future cycle. So just found that interesting, because you look at all these candidates who raised so much money during the primary season, then you kind of sit there and think, well, what do you do with all this money once you lose? So that's what Greta Call wrote over at MinnPost. You can check that out over on MinnPost's website. Looking at some other political news, get prepared to see lots and lots of political ads, even here in the Twin Cities, from the CD8 congressional race. That is because Donald Trump's pro-America First PAC has announced they're spending $12.5 million across 10 House races and 2 Senate races, and they're going to spend $2 million of those dollars here in Minnesota in the 8th Congressional District. So even though CD8 is pretty much comprised only of northern Minnesota, even here in the metro, we still see some of those ads, since parts of the far north metro actually encompass CD8, and since Trump's PAC is raising and spending $2 million here in Minnesota, get prepared to see a lot of ugly ads coming up here this fall. And we might even see some from CD1 as well. They're actually spending $1.1 million in CD1 as well, although I'm not quite sure we're going to see quite as many of those ads here in the metro area, since CD1 doesn't quite go into those south metro areas, much like CD8 kind of dips down into the north metro here in the area. So that's a look at some of the local political news taking place today. We have some other stories we're going to highlight a little bit later on in the show. But another thing I wanted to talk about, this is a more national story, and it's something very sad that happened over the weekend. John McCain passed away at the age of 82 after his battle with brain cancer. Of course, late last week, his family announced that he was going to be foregoing treatment, and that kind of put the writing on the wall that unfortunately he did not have a lot of time left. So John McCain passed away at the age of 82. And whether you disagreed with him or agreed with him a lot of issues, I, of course, happen to disagree with him a lot of issues, especially since about the 2008 election when the RNC really moved him to the right on issues. He still came across as a, at least to me, a somewhat decent politician, one of the few Republican decent politicians we had left in the country. And I just want to play some audio from a clip that John McCain did here in Minnesota. It was a campaign rally in 2008 that took place in Lakeville, where a couple of Minnesota residents, unfortunately, took aim at Barack Obama, saying he was a Muslim, he was an Arab, they didn't trust him. And John McCain, to his credit, actually shot down these messages from these, well, very right-wing racist commentators here from Minnesota. In fact, let's go ahead and play that audio right now just to kind of jog your memory.
We're scared of an Obama presidency, and I'll tell you why. I'm concerned about someone that cohorts with domestic terrorists such as Ayers.
I have to tell you, he is a decent person and a person that you do not have to be scared as president of the United States. Now I
got to ask you a question. I do not. I can't trust Obama. I have read about him, and he's an Arab. He is not.
No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with on fundamental issues, and that's what this campaign is all about. He's not. Thank you.
So again, while I disagreed with John McCain on many issues, in fact, there were some things I would have liked to have seen him do in that response a little bit more. In fact, even saying that you can also be a good person and an Arab as well. He at least took some of these people to task, saying that Obama's a bad person because he's an Arab. So even though he disagreed with John McCain on a lot of issues, well, he at least was still one of the few, well, somewhat decent Republicans we had in the country. And we certainly wouldn't see Donald Trump do something like that if someone at an event were to say Obama were a Muslim. I think Trump would either ignore it or also maybe even agree with him. So John McCain passing away at the age of 82. Coming up next on AM 950, we have a very special guest, a surprise guest that I think you'll get a kick out of. That's coming up in just a few minutes here on AM 950. It's Brett Johnson filling in on the Matt McNeil Show.
I would say I'm sorry if I thought that it.
I'm John Peterson, and at Ferndale Market, we are proud to provide our free-range turkey to local restaurants and natural food stores. One of our partners since the beginning has been Birchwood Cafe, and we're excited to announce a new partnership product, the Birchwood Turkey Burger Patty. Made from their popular turkey burger recipe, using our antibiotic-free turkey and Birchwood's local and organic ingredients. Put an end to bland turkey burgers. Find this and all our Ferndale turkey products at your local co-op or natural food store. Visit FerndaleMarket.com.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug from Hidden Edges Radio. When I'm not on the radio, I'm standing in front of audiences training about diversity and inclusion and on how to be welcoming to others who are different from us. More than ever, employers and organizations need professional diversity and inclusion training. I can offer that training through my company, Human Inspiration Works, LLC. I'd love to make your workplace or organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
Hi, Gregory Rich, owner of Habitation Furnishing and Design and host of Drink in the Style right here on AM 950. Hey, I've only got a few seconds, so here's the deal. Habitation is the coolest furniture store in town. Not only have we got some of the most exceptional furniture in the cities, but in many cases, Habitation can offer you store credit on your existing furniture. Stop in, talk to one of our designers, and let us help you make your home exceptional. Habitation Furnishing and Design, 4317 Excelsior Boulevard in St. Louis Park.
Hi, friends. I've been talking to you about Minnesota's first green cemetery, Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's an entirely new way of looking at our last earthly step. Burials are designed to have as little impact on the environment as possible. For many of us, a continuation of the commitment we made during our lifetimes. Let me suggest you go to the website, mngreengraves.com. Explore what it is. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's a lovely place, a peaceful place. Minnesota's first green cemetery.
This is Ken Hagland of Minnesota Hospice, inviting you to listen to our brand new show, airing on AM 950 on Saturdays from noon to 1. The Minnesota Hospice Show looks forward to discussing how we honor life and to exploring the physical, spiritual, mental, and emotional issues we experience throughout all stages of life. Learn how hospice is the new face of hope and how it's your benefit, your choice. Join us Saturdays at noon and check us out online at minnesotahospice.com.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson, Hunter Haas, Eric Nelson also helping out here on your Monday afternoon. We're all filling in for Matt McNeil, who is, as I've described it, he is on assignment in an undisclosed location doing undisclosed things.
The mystery of it.
I made it just sound like he joined a militia or something. Anyways,
well, no, I'm in South Carolina, so it's I don't know if you have a map. It's south of North Carolina. It's pretty known. It's not a mystery state, I don't think. It's not like I've gone to a Western compound.
I just like the way I've been plugging that all week, so people have no idea where Matt is, what he's doing. Maybe he's been following around Trump or Manafort or the Russians.
I really want to talk about, you know, don't tell me. Once again, I go on vacation and no news at all breaks. I am in possibly one of the true unheralded jewels of America. It is a town called Beaufort, South Carolina. It's just up the coast from Hilton Head, and Hilton Head a lot of people go to Hilton Head. That's kind of it's a wealthy area, lots of golf courses, lots of drinking, lots of this. Beaufort is this incredibly historic town. It has Revolutionary War history. It has tons of Civil War history. They've done tons of movies. They filmed some Forrest Gump here, Prince of Tides here. What was the movie? The Big Chill. They filmed that here. A lot of these movies got filmed here, so it's wonderfully friendly. It has some of the most wonderful boating and fishing I've ever done. It is also got, there's an island called Hunting Island, which I am shocked is as empty as it is. It is this gorgeous, chunk of beach. As a matter of fact, I was just out there earlier today and just had a grand time. And so it's this lovely place. I happen to have family lives down here. You know, like a lot of Minnesotans, you have someone who is, gets a little older, and then life on the range becomes a little rough. And So they moved down here where it's ungodly hot. I will say that.
You're in South Carolina in August area.
But it is just an amazing place to come. There's so many things to do here. It's a really cute town, and I can't recommend it enough. And plus the fact that if you can't find enough stuff to do here, you got Savannah down the road, you got Charleston, South Carolina just down the road. There's a lot of stuff there as well.
So I got to ask, since you said you found kind of an uninhabited island down there, have you gone there and looked for Bigfoot?
No. There is no Bigfoot here. I've gone on the quest for what's called Gullah cooking, G-U-L-L-A-H. It's the local low country cooking, which is unbelievable. It's just fantastic food, and you can find that anywhere here. No, I was actually, you have to be careful. When I was at the beach today, they actually had a dangerous animal warning, and I'm like, Manafort? And no, it was apparently some stingrays had washed up on the beach, so there's stingrays somewhere in the water. Obviously, you want to be careful of them. It wasn't that dangerous. It's not like I'm, you know, doing nature shows or anything, but it's because, you know, they're not going to be in where the tide, when the tide was going out and the waves were crashing in, you know, that's not where most animals are going to be. So it wasn't too dangerous, but that we went boating earlier, and because of low tide in this area, it's this big kind of river area that you basically eventually dumps into the Atlantic Ocean. There are some tidal sandbars, which are, you know, completely uninhabited. And they started school, as we start school after Labor Day, they started school here on Monday. And so last Monday, I should say. And they basically, there have not been many kids out. And then, you know, obviously parents go back to work as well. And so there have been a few times where we stopped, and yeah, we're the only people on this entire sandbar island, which is just, it is wonderful. So I've enjoyed that quite a bit.
That's perfect timing. South Carolina has a ton of personality. It's got its own little identity. I love it down there.
It does. I mean, they are, it's interesting. They are wildly proud of their being part of the original 13 colonies. But they're also, you know, still for the most part wildly proud of their Civil War heritage too. And I mean, it's interesting where we're at in Beaufort. It was called the Great Skedaddle. I mean, when the Civil War started up, basically warships were coming into Beaufort Harbor, and you know, so all the people of Beaufort ran for the hills, and this area was held by the North from the very beginning of the war. I mean, as a matter of fact, most of the people, the white residents of this area, and this is a town which was founded, it was the kind of the city houses for the plantation owners. So there was a lot of pro-plantation, pro-Confederacy whites here who knew that if they, you know, they were terrified of the North, they were also terrified of the slaves rising up against them. They ran for the hills in the Great Skedaddle. And so most of these buildings in the area, one of the reasons why this town survived, especially Sherman marching up the coast, is because the North was already here, and they were using these buildings as hospitals, as recovery zones. And, of course, they also started some of the first African-American schools here very early on in the Civil War. They had so many freed slaves that the North was looking at this area as a way to say, okay, we're going to start giving people some of the land, we're going to give them, start educating the slaves who had not been educated at the time. Martin Luther King is one of the pivotal characters here. He wrote his I Have a Dream speech at one of the centers that is down here. So there's always been a strong African American presence as well. It's just like I said, it's a really unique area. Still quite a few Confederates though. They like their losing side of that war.
It's still the war between the states down there, isn't it? Or the war of Northern aggression?
I've had more than a few people say Yankee to me, which is kind of, Yankee is, if you mean that we kicked your ass, sure, Yankee. We'll go with that then. All right. You know, I have no problem saying that to you. Okay. No, it's what I find is interesting is I was down here last year, and there is a change to a point. Now, I'm not going to fool ourselves. We're not about, if South Carolina starts voting in mass Democrat, the Republicans are in far greater trouble than I think anyone can even perceive. It's not. There's still going to be a lot of Republicans that win down here. But coming down here August of last year and then coming down August of this year, there's a few things I've noticed. First of all, you don't see the Trump signs anymore. There were Trump signs everywhere when I came down last year. Not in your face, America, we love Trump. It was just, you know, people had their Trump bumper sticker, Trump signs. They're all gone. You don't see them. And it's, you know, and that's a telling sign. And these are people that want to be proud conservatives. But what you're also seeing is you're seeing a lot of Democratic signs out there. And, you know, and the signs are very interesting. They'll say, Democrats care, come, let me tell you why. And so there clearly is this education that has to happen. And a reminder, I mean, this is in the South. I mean, people here have been voting Republican knee-jerk for 50 years. They don't know any better than to vote Republican. And finally, and it's shocking it's taken this long to see this, but finally they're starting to say, well, wait a minute here, why haven't the Republicans delivered anything on for us? And I think that because in 2016 the promises were so direct and so specific, the health care, of course, being the prime one, you know, cheaper health care, better coverage, that's not even come close to coming to fruition. I think a lot of people are stepping back and saying, you know, wait a minute here, we're going backwards, we're not going forwards. And so it might not be leading to a mass exodus to the Democrats, but it definitely is leading to a lot of people asking the question, why am I so loyal to the Republicans? And there's a lot of problems down here. I mean, you come to the South, the schools here, there have been a few stories I've read about how the schools are very overcrowded. You know, the Republicans created that. At one point, especially in the late 60s, early 70s, most of these schools were well-funded, and they had, you know, good quality schools. But slowly, conservatives have pulled money away and made the schools worse and worse and worse. And now they're saying, well, the schools are not fixable. But you are seeing people look at the Republicans and saying, well, they're not fixable because you broke them. And the Republicans' only response is, well, what's happened has happened. Let's look to a different cause. And people are now saying, no, let's go back to what we did have. And I think that's another thing which is a real challenge to the Republicans down here, at least from what I've seen.
So we've got Matt McNeil of the Matt McNeil Show, a guest on the Matt McNeil Show. How do you like that? So I got to ask you, have you been talking to anyone down there just generally about politics, what they think about Trump, what they're thinking about doing here in 2018? Have you had a chance to talk with folks about that, kind of what their thoughts are?
I've talked to a few of them, and a reminder down here too, a lot of Democrats are, you know, they're old Republicans, you know, and it's, you know, and as the Democrats, the Democratic Party is down here go, I don't think that, you know, they feel as if sometimes their best option is someone who's familiar. I've talked to a few people. It's my family is generally liberals. There's the neighbors to my brother and my father who are, you know, some of these people are very wealthy. And, you know, Trump has made them a ton of money. I've always said, you know, I understand why racists vote for Trump. I understand why the wealthy people vote for Trump. He's been a boon for both of them. I don't understand anyone else who votes for themselves. That's why I've labeled them idiots. I mean, idiots, racists, and wealthy people, that's Trump's base. And so when you're looking at the houses and when you're looking at historic Beaufort, where this is at, these are these big mansions which are, you know, 200, 300 years old, and they're, you know, historic in their own nature. The property values on some of these, no, my family doesn't live in these, but the property values down there are, you know, $2 million, $3 million. You're right on the ocean. It's very nice. There are historic homes, beautiful homes, that's for sure, just with that great Spanish moss and the flowers everywhere. And these people, they've made money off of Trump. And so there are people out there that I've talked to, neighbors that live in these historic houses who have said, oh, yeah, no, I think Trump's a nightmare, but, God, he's given me a hell of a lot of money, so I'm not going to go against the guy. On the other side, I have met one or two people who, you know, and how many times have we heard this story? I now had someone who went through a medical crisis, and if Obamacare was still in place and I had a state that, you know, was embracing it and trying to help its citizens, well, we would be going bankrupt right now, but, you know, we're looking like we're having to move, and we're going to have to move to a different place. You know, it shouldn't have to take you know, Randy in Coon Rapids called in a few weeks ago, and Randy, you know, made the, you know, he said that this young girl that was held at this immigration detention center, this child that was held in a kid prison, you know, she deserved to get sexually assaulted because she shouldn't have come here, which is so insane, it's not even funny. He did call back the next day, but it shouldn't take that level of insanity for people to realize, holy crap, what the hell have I become? And I think that's, you know, down here, that's going to be a lot of this. Down in the South, it's going to be a heck of a lot of, oh my God, what have I become? Now, a reminder too, there is an institutionalized racism which they don't see. It exists everywhere here, from the you know, kind of the wealthy white part of town to the, you know, the non-wealthy African American part of town. You know, my brother was telling me, you know, we go to the Publix store because that's the grocery store that's kind of, you know, got the high-end stuff, but the Piggly Wiggly, that's for the African-American shopper. And so they generally don't go there. If you want to find, you know, things that white people generally buy, you go to a different store. I mean, there is that level of institutional racism which, you know, they don't see. They don't see it down here. It's just that's the way things have always been. But they're talking, my brother was talking a little bit about St. Helena Island and how it's a very poor island in this chain of islands on the coast, and how, you know, the African Americans there have always, you know, had a hard time, and there, it's the, you know, the system failed down there, and that this grand idea of African American building their own community in the country failed. And one of the things I corrected him on, and I had to correct him on, is that, you know, they failed because, you know, when white Southerners basically saw African Americans living on land that they had owned and forced them to work, and now they were the landowners, they went crazy and they refused to help them. They refused to have any government taxpayer dollars go help those people. Those people should help themselves. We've given them more than they deserve, and in turn, it's created this, you know, these areas where when there's a bad part of town in the South, that's always the African American part of town. But it's always the unspoken thing is how the African Americans somehow made it bad themselves, and that's not real. The real problem is that the white, you know, general ruling class has not really, you know, embrace these people, giving them a fair chance, giving them a system that can make them succeed. And so when they inevitably fail because the system is not in place for them to have success, then they blame them for being the failures. And I think that's something that has to be, you know, you're going to have to correct. And so, like I said, there is things here that are real deep. And you've got to be careful down here talking to people about politics because, you know, for them, they, you know, the idea of them even stepping back from a conservative Republican and thinking about whether or not that person deserves their vote is a very huge change. But there definitely are people down here that are doing that.
Matt, have you seen any good surrender humans down in South Carolina?
Well, the Dr. Pepper cake is pretty good. There is a thing called wrap snacks. Now, once again, if you've ever been out there, surrender humans, these are foods which the only reason they seem to exist on this plane of Earth is so that aliens can fatten us up for the eventual harvest. there's a thing called wrap snacks, which just when I am eating my, you know, delicious snack food, I think it's Migos on there. Oh boy, that adds to that. boiled peanuts. I don't think that's so much a surrender human. It's just sort of like, you guys understand, we don't have to eat dandelions either anymore, right? and so, you know, at one point we used to eat dandelions. We don't do that anymore. You don't have to boil the peanuts and eat those. You know, we can get you a Snickers bar. I mean, do you want a Snickers bar? And apparently they still haven't. I will say I am going to load up with produce when I come back. I am going to stop at every farm stand I can between here and Atlanta and get as much of especially the peaches down here are amazing.
Oh, that's Matt McNeil of The Matt McNeil Show. He's coming up on Wednesday back live in studio here in Minnesota. Matt, thanks so much for calling in and being a guest on your own show.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate everyone who's been filling in. It has been wonderful to have a few days off, and I look forward to getting in there right in time to get over to the end of the State Fair.
And again, thanks to Matt McNeil for coming on as a guest. A special appearance by Matt. We got to do that more when Matt goes on vacation. He's back coming up on Wednesday. You got one more day of substitute hosts, as it'll be Hunter and myself filling in tomorrow here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We'll take a break and talk more local politics in just a few minutes. Call us at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, coming up on AM 950.
Hi, this is Charlie. My dad is Minnesota's wildly popular and handsome radio host, Matt McNeil. Did I say that right, Dad?
Perfect!
When I got my driver's license, my parents let me drive a Sienna from Rudy Luther Toyota. I love it. It's easy, comfortable, and hauls all my baseball gear. And my parents love the safety. That's why they wanted me in the Sienna.
Thanks to Rudy Luther Toyota, my son is safe as he begins his driving adventure. We're a two Sienna family thanks to Rudy Luther Toyota. Visit them today in Golden Valley at 169 and 394.
Crazy about pets? We are too. The Pet Connection Show is a great venue for fun, informative, and creative conversations about pets. Join myself, Kathy Menard, and Dr. Nicole Parole, along with guests who are leaders in the dynamic and growing pet industry, as we discuss healthcare, relationships, behaviors, and even political issues as they relate to our pets. So come, sit, stay for the Pet Connection Show, Sundays 11 a.m. to noon on AM 950 Radio, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office. We always offer a free exam and x-rays for new patients because we believe you shouldn't have to pay to find out what's wrong with your teeth. Call today. We're open early and late and Saturdays to fit your schedule. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Enjoy a delicious home-cooked breakfast or lunch away from the kitchen at Milda's Cafe, now open 7 days a week. Milda's Cafe has been cooking up family favorites since 1964. Grab a coffee and sit down for a delicious Philly scramble, house-made rolls, or Denver omelet. Stop in for lunch where you'll find authentic Finnish pasties every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Open weekdays 6 to 3, weekends 8 to 2. Milda's Cafe on Glenwood Avenue, 4 blocks east of Penn.
Tom Hartman here letting you know how you can go solar with All Energy Solar, even way up north in Minnesota. Lots of people ask them, isn't Minnesota too cloudy for solar? No. The truth? For one thing, Minneapolis gets nearly as much sun each year as Houston, Texas. But it isn't just about how much sun you get. It's also about having access to great local incentive programs that make solar affordable. Learn what your options are to save with solar and visit allenergysolar.com today.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Brett Johnson and Eric Nelson filling in for Matt McNeil on Monday afternoon. Eric, how's it going today?
Going good.
Oh, good. Heard you were getting a little workout doing some moving for a friend. Hopefully that's been going.
Yeah, my younger brother.
Younger brother.
So I would consider him more of like a foe.
More of a foe, yeah. Is this his first place he's moving into? Or
No, he's moving into another place.
Gotcha, so. Okay. Well, you're a good older brother for going and doing that, aren't you? Yeah, yeah. Got to let him know that as well.
I deserve praise.
Yeah, you do deserve praise for that. So I got a question for you. Have you been out to the State Fair this year yet?
I have not. I was thinking about tomorrow.
Well, if you do, you'll be part of the record-setting attendance they've had so far at the State Fair. as they've set a daily attendance record for the first 3 days in the fair or in the year's 12-day run. Ugh, botched that sentence. Anyways, basically we've set a record and a ton of people have gone to the state fair. In fact, 222,194 is what they've had thus far. So a ton of people getting out of the state fair. And I think it helped that that Thursday opening day was just beautiful weather.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I don't know about you. I'm okay with the fair doing it like once every 3 or 4 years, but I'm more of an introvert, so it's just too many people for me to be out there, you know, for 8 hours at a time. I can take a couple hours every once in a while. I don't know about you, but
I love the fair. You go there every year.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember you were talking with Hunter, I think, when you two guys were filling in. Yeah. You said people watching, which I thought was one of your favorite activities. Yeah. And I kind of thought about that, too. That is kind of a fun thing to do, to see.
You see a lot of just strange people who.
Yeah. Yeah. Strange is a good way to put it. You get people from all corners of the state coming to the state fair. And yeah, that's kind of the way I'd put it as well. But you always got to go for those sweet Martha cookies and anything on a stick. A lot of good food, concerts, a lot of fun stuff at the state fair. And speaking of which, Laura Hedlund of Food Freedom Radio is out there this week. She's there, I believe, from 3 until 5 p.m. trying to get some what she's calling lazy cooking recipes. So stop on out at the state fair. We have details about that at am950radio.com. Taking a look at some other local stories taking place from the weekend, kind of like this new Tim Walz for Governor hashtag that they've been putting out there. It's hashtag Walz or Wisconsin. I kind of like that one. It works on a couple of different levels because, first off, Scott Walker has just been a terrible governor in Wisconsin. But I think even to casual observers of politics in Minnesota or people who don't even pay attention to politics, who wants to be like Wisconsin?
Yeah, it plays into the state pride
thing. Yeah, yeah, that state rivalry thing. So I think that's kind of a well-done slogan by Tim Walz. Walz or Wisconsin. And it's definitely true. Jeff Johnson, I believe, is on record saying he would like to do a lot of what Scott Walker has done in Wisconsin. So it certainly is the choice. You can vote for Tim Walz, or you can vote to be the state of Wisconsin, Wisconsin West, whatever you want to call it. Just something we cannot let have happen this fall, but I'm liking the chances of Tim Walz running away with that election. In fact, what I talked about previously when I hosted the show, I think within the next few weeks, especially in the Tim Walz versus Jeff Johnson and also the Karen Housley versus Tina Smith race, we're probably going to see, unless the polls really tighten within the next probably 2 or 3 weeks, a lot of those resources from those campaigns that Republicans would normally donate towards Jeff Johnson and Karen Housley probably go over to that attorney general race and Doug Wardlow, the Republican candidate. Again, the GOP has not won in Minnesota a statewide race since 2006, when Tim Pawlenty was narrowly reelected, knocking off Mike Hatch, who was leading in the polls till he had kind of a meltdown at the end of that campaign. So the GOP is desperate to win any statewide race, and they'd love to knock off someone like Keith Ellison, who's been a real boogeyman for them for years and years and years. And I just want to address something I've talked about whenever I guest hosted for the past couple of times, this Republican candidate, Doug Wardlow. This guy is going to try to fly under the radar because a lot of the news coverage has been on Keith Ellison, Keith Ellison, Keith Ellison, and his domestic abuse allegations. And we cannot let a guy like Doug Wardlow fly under the radar, as he is an extreme right-winger who is very much in favor of, well, harassing people in the LGBT community. Just taking a look at a City Pages article they wrote about him today, and I'm glad they did this, just highlighting some of these things that Doug Wardlow has done in the past. He worked, of course, for the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is a far-right group that basically goes out and sues school districts and businesses to discriminate against people as part of the LGBT community. And one of the highlights that the City Pages article, well, decided to go on was this case back in 2013 of a woman named Amy Stevens. She's a transgender woman who ran a funeral home in Michigan, and she told her boss that she planned to transition genders in 2013 and wanted to wear feminine clothes to work. Unfortunately, her boss fired her 2 weeks later, saying a person's sex is an immutable, God-given gift. So the Alliance for Defending Freedom and Doug Wardlow, again, our attorney general candidate on the Republican Party in Minnesota, took up this case, arguing that the firing of Stevens was a matter of dress code and not gender identity. The district judge ruled in their favor, and Wardlow, who is the spokesperson for the case, called the ruling a big victory for religious freedom. Also, last year, Wardlow gave a presentation at an Anoka Hennepin school board meeting addressing his concerns that they were going to be more accommodating to transgender people and using bathrooms, so he was very much against that. And, of course, Wardlow also bemoaned the Supreme Court's ruling from a few years ago that allowed same-sex couples the same rights to marriage that were already given to heterosexual couples. It was a move he called a totalitarian impulse. I mean, come on, really a totalitarian impulse just because you're letting two gay people get married? He said it effectively stripped away Christians' rights to a belief that marriage could only exist between one man and one woman. A right, it seems, that supersedes the rights of others to believe anything else. So that is your Republican candidate, Doug Wardlow. Isn't that just sound like a real great guy?
I must be living in some sort of bubble because I never hear anyone, even the Republicans I know, worry about gay marriage anymore.
Yeah, and this guy wants
it seems
to,
like, yeah.
This guy essentially wants to take us back to like 2004 and 2005 when that was a really big issue on the Republican side. And you're right, they kind of have given up on that issue for the past few years. And if we put Doug Wardlow in the Attorney General's office, get ready to see a lot of ugly lawsuits attacking the LGBT community. So even if Doug, or even if Keith Ellison, I should say, was not necessarily your first choice, he'd probably be a lot better than Doug Wardlow. So make sure you stay on this and tell your friends and neighbors that even if they're not big fans of Keith Ellison and they're sitting there looking at the ballot saying, well, let's vote for this other guy, this Doug Wardlow guy, tell them about Mr. Doug Wardlow. That is not a guy you want to see as our attorney general, as a consumer advocate. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, and we have a caller on the line, one of our long-distance callers, David from San Francisco, kind of going on what I was talking about. He wants to address crazy politicians. David, what is on your mind?
Hey, how are you? You know, I'm old enough to remember when pollution was a real big deal. When I was a little kid, Lady Bird Johnson, President Johnson's wife, was talking about pollution and littering and whatnot, and believe it or not, she was actually able to, you know, create an awareness that pollution was a bad thing. Well, now pollution, the word pollution is not really used so much commonly, and, you know, whether it's Greens or Democrats or, you know, other people who are running for office would actually be wise to start using it again because it hits in probably five of the different categories that the Republicans are leaning on. For example, you know, they always rant about Obamacare. And if you think about it, many of the epidemics that are hitting us right now, whether it's diabetes or cancer or heart disease, are directly caused by pollution. And the polluters are not paying their cleanup costs. They're not paying the medical bills, and they're basically sapping America because they're leaving us sicker and poorer because of pollution. And one of the other angles, you were just talking about, you know, transgender kids. There was a book that came out just about 20 years ago called Our Stolen Future. And if I remember right, Al Gore actually did an intro to the book, and he talks about ADD, and it goes into a lot of different other medical maladies, but pollution was actually causing a whole lot of kids, somewhere between 25% and 30% of kids were being born sexless, that their sex organs were being mutated while in the mother's womb because of various exposures to benzene and formaldehyde and all sorts of different things. And that kids were being born with mutated sex organs or basically sterile. And so now when you're seeing 20 years later, these kids are growing up, they're in junior high school, whatnot, and their sex organs, you know, 25 to 30% of the kids are being born mutated. That is a big issue. And the religious right to go after gays is absolutely asked backwards because they should be going after, you know, if somebody wanted to challenge these religious right people, challenge them on stewardship of the earth, keeping God's green earth clean and avoiding various kinds of hazardous wastes in the streams, in the sky, you know, whatnot. So, you know, looking at this book, Our Stolen Future, they were talking about the same benzene and formaldehyde that was affecting kids' brains. The biggest example they gave was that,
hey, David, just got to cut you off there just because we're coming up on a commercial break, but always do appreciate the call from San Francisco, one of our long-distance listeners, long-time listener of the station. Really appreciate it, and definitely check out that book as well. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, coming up in just a few minutes. We're going to be talking about, Republicans scared of losing the House of Representatives. In fact, they've already started predicting what Democrats plan on investigating should they take the majority. We'll talk about that coming up next on AM 950.
Supporting the best local and independently owned restaurants in the Twin Cities has never been easier. You'll find an expansive list of local dining options at eatlocalminnesota.com, from classic American comfort food to authentic flavors from around the world. Cafe Latte offers made-from-scratch soups, salads, sandwiches, and mouth-watering desserts. Stop in the wine bar and enjoy a unique pizza loaded with fresh vegetables and perfectly roasted meats. Over 30 wines by the glass, Cafe Latte highlights Washington State wines and is the perfect destination for date night or an evening with friends. 850 Grand Avenue, St. Paul. Victor's 1959 Cafe has been serving South Minneapolis traditional Cuban food for over 15 years. Victor's is open for breakfast and lunch daily and now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try the Pollo Tropicale or the Sandwich Cubano, which was featured on Food Network. More at eatlocalminnesota.com.
This is Chad, owner of AM950, here to tell you about Snap Construction. They're experts in roofing, siding, window, and insurance restoration. They have energy-efficient products available for both residential and commercial properties. This spring, when we needed a company to take a look at a problem with our roof, I called the company I knew I could trust, Snap Construction. I've known Ryan, the owner at Snap Construction, for years, so I knew I could trust him. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their reviews online. They are arguably the most well-reviewed exterior contractor online in the metro area. Over the years, Ryan has always said the same thing to me about his work. If we build it, shouldn't we be held accountable for the work indefinitely? He backed that statement up years ago when Snap Construction was a pioneer in offering a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee on all their work. For a free estimate or general questions, call the locally owned company AM950 Trusts, Snap Construction, at 612-333-SNAP. That's 612-333-SNAP, or find them online at snapconstruction.com. They have financing options available.
Stages Theater Company is dedicated to creating a space where diverse opinions, courageous dialogue, and community engagement is not only valued, but vital to our shared artistic and educational success. Stages Theater Company creates a welcoming home for all. For over 30 years, Stages has supported quality theater programming for children. Stages gives opportunities for youth to be on stage, backstage, in the audience, and in the classroom. Whether you come to see a show, enroll a young person in a workshop, or benefit from their outreach programs in the community, Stages brings art to life. Learn about Stages Theater by going to stagestheater.org and become part of the magic of live theater by taking your family to an amazing show or enrolling someone you love in an education program. Stages Theater Company operates out of the Hopkins Center for the Arts, located in Main Street in the heart of downtown Hopkins. For more information on Stages Theater, go to stagestheater.org. That's stagestheater.org.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson, Eric Nelson filling in for Matt McNeil. Matt is again back coming up on Wednesday. So Axios was able to obtain a spreadsheet that circulated through Republican circles on and off Capitol Hill, including at least one leadership office, they say. And basically, this spreadsheet that Republicans have put together previews the investigations Democrats will likely launch if they're able to flip the House of Representatives. And this is a pretty unbelievable look, to say the least, at some of these subjects, because a lot of these I forgot about, and a lot of these are very much worth investigating. So we'll run through just a few of these, and Eric, chime in if you want to think that any of these need to be investigated. Obviously, number one, Trump's tax returns. Love to get those subpoenaed from the House of Representatives. Also, payments to Stormy Daniels, the firing of James Comey, Trump's firing of U.S. attorneys. Remember, he fired 46 U.S. attorneys as soon as he took office. Also, his transgender ban for military troops. That was done via Twitter. And then a couple of these really caught my eye, because these are two that I think could really take down Trump. And this is, first up, not only his personal use of email, but his staff's use of personal email. You remember going back to Hillary Clinton, how emails, emails, emails. Well, apparently aides have urged the president to swap out his Twitter phone on a monthly basis because it's such a security risk, and he refuses to do so because he says it would be inconvenient.
Yeah, I'm sure his phone is like the most secure line in the country.
Yeah, he's basically got two phones, they say. One is for making calls and one is for using Twitter.
He's not clicking on every pop-up link that pops
up.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, any Breitbart story that pops up, he's clicking on. You imagine just how easy that is to hack if he's got a phone that's not being replaced every few months. If it's got a camera, I mean, that's easy for hackers to get into. It's such a huge security risk.
I'm sure every country on Earth has, you know, a big mirror just right into his phone.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, and that's something that I think could really bring him down. If you were to get an investigation launched into his personal use of email and also his phone usage, I think that's something that could really alarm a lot of people with how much information we've given to Russians, Chinese, the North Koreans. Think of anyone like that. And the other one I wanted to cover was the discussion of classified information that he's done at Mar-a-Lago. This one you might not remember because it was done very early in Trump's presidency. In fact, I think it was done like February of 2017, where he was discussing North Korean nuclear strategy with the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe right in public at the Mar-a-Lago in front of waiters as they were exchanging dishes. They're talking about nuclear strategy. So basically, if you have a lot of money, you could probably just bribe one of these Mar-a-Lago waiters and get some inside information on what Trump's nuclear strategy is in North Korea. I mean, that is such a huge violation. I just can't believe that. That one hasn't been picked up on more. So if Democrats take the House, those are just some of the things that will probably be investigated. According to Republicans, not Democrats, these are what Republicans think Democrats will investigate if they're able to flip the House coming up in November. So make sure we flip that House, because guys like Eric Paulson, Jason Lewis, if we leave them in, they're certainly not going to be investigating any of those issues. You can find that full list over at Axios as they discussed a number of subjects that are likely to come up in investigations should Democrats flip the House. One more thing to cover before we wrap up the show today, and this is from the Star Tribune, and they're saying golfer sports revenue fell by $8 million, and it's mostly been due to a drop in ticket sales that's occurred primarily in football, men's basketball, and men's hockey. And I'll just say, as a former longtime season ticket holder to men's hockey with my family, not surprised by that at all. Those ticket prices have just skyrocketed over the years. Then, of course, you had this mandatory scholarship donation that you had to make, which I'm sure very little of that money was actually going to scholarships for students. So University of Minnesota's got to get their ticket situation straightened out. Probably a big reason why their revenues have fallen by $8 million. And that's despite the fact we paid for that giant football stadium as well. You can find more information about that in the Star Tribune. That was their article on the front page this morning. Well, this has been Brett and Eric filling in for Matt McNeil today. We got Hunter, he's in hosting tomorrow's show. And up next on AM 950, Doug Padgett is going to be talking about Trump's ugly legal week. Last week, he'll be talking with James Lamond of the Center for American Progress. That's next on AM 950.